Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies brought to you with the support of the School of Business, Management and Economics at the University of Sussex. This is part one of episode 44, where Ralph, Pedro, Greta and Tom discuss two articles, one by Malone, Yates and Benjamin on electronic markets and electronic hierarchies, and another by Oliver Williamson on the economics of organization, the transaction cost approach. To get the text and for more information, please go to our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. And now, please enjoy the episode.
This is Ralph coming to you from Sevilla in España.
Hi, I'm Greta coming from Oxford, UK.
Hi, this is Pedro coming to you from Kenilworth, a lovely town in the UK.
And this is Tom coming to you from Carlisle, Pennsylvania in the United States.
We're going to review two articles today that take an economic approach to organizational studies that offer us new insights that might not otherwise be available and are really interesting articles. The first one is by Williamson. It's the Economics of Organization, the Transaction Cost Approach, and looks at organizations primarily through transactions and the cost of transactions and how those are minimized and what that means for organizations and the way organizations are run. And then the second article came along afterwards, 6 years afterwards. And it's written by Malone, Yates, and Benjamin. It's a really interesting article because it looked at the state of electronic markets and electronic hierarchies at the time, and then made predictions about what changes might happen in the future. And it gives us a really great opportunity to look back over 30 years and see just how well the predictions worked out. Today, Greta is going to lead us through a summary of both articles, and then we'll start discussing the things that stood out for both of us. So go ahead, Greta.
Thanks, Ralph. Before we go into the articles, I would like to provide some background about the transaction cost approach. Both articles are actually building on the original article of the British economist Ronald Coase, who in 1937 wrote his famous article, The Nature of the Firm. And in this article, Coase asked the fundamental question, why organizations exist? Given that production, or the work that goes into production, can also be done without any organizations, such as in the markets. So Coase observed great variety in the way production work was organized across firms and across industries, and he tried to come up with an economic explanation why and under which circumstances we can expect firms to emerge. He therefore asked under which conditions production work is contracted out in the market and when it is coordinated by managers and hierarchies. And in the article, he tries to answer these questions, and he argues there are transaction costs to using the markets. So while economic theory at the time suggested that it was always cheaper to contract out than to hire, Coase pointed out that there are costs involved in relying on the price mechanism of the market to organize work. These, for instance, comprise certain information costs, bargaining costs, contract enforcement costs. And these transaction costs can lead that the price of organizing work in the market can actually be higher than when such work is done within the firm. At the same time, Coase, in his writings, makes us aware that there's a natural limit or a boundary to the size of the firm. Firms are, for instance, limited in the amount of production work that can be organized internally, given its resources, its knowledge, and its production technologies. So for the firm to have lower cost than the market, it is important to find an optimal balance, he says, between what work should be organized in firms and what can be contracted out. And this balance can vary across firms and for different industries. So why this article has been so influential is that it triggered a stream of literature, not only on transaction costs, but also on theory of the firm, or let's say theories of the firm, transaction cost approach being one of those theories. So this is a little bit of background behind the article of Oliver Williamson. So in Oliver Williams' 1981 article, as well as in related publications such as his book Markets and Hierarchies, Williamson further developed and popularized the arguments about transaction costs and its importance to the study of organizations and theorizing firm boundaries. So in his 1981 article that was published in the American Journal of Sociology, he attempts to explain the basic arguments of transaction costs to a sociological audience. And basically, he says a transaction occurs when a good or a service is transferred across a technologically separable interface. And the analysis of transaction costs is concerned with the comparative cost of planning, adapting, and monitoring tasks under alternative governance structures. And what he, as well as Coase, do is kind of making a comparison between the governance structure of a hierarchy or a firm and the governance structure of a market, which could be a labor market, for instance.
Yeah, what I would add is in the hierarchical case for our listeners is that in that particular case, you're told by the organization who you're going to work with, or the organization works out in advance who the supplier of a particular product or service is going to be, as opposed to putting it out for competitive bidding and then finding out who has the, you know, the best match of product features and price and deliverability for what your needs are. So that's what I took away from the article about the major distinction between a market basis for obtaining some good or service and the hierarchical basis.
Yes, I think so too. And like what these articles do is, instead of taking the organization for granted, they try to come up with an explanation of why we have organizations and why we have decided to do particular work within the organization or produce particular products and services within the organization, and why the other things we leave up to the market. So when I go to the second article of Thomas Malone, Joanne Yates, and Robert Benjamin, which talks about like the role that digital technologies and information systems play in changing the way economic activity or the organization of work is being done in markets or in hierarchies. So this article was written, as Ralph pointed out, in 1987, and it kind of makes predictions about how information technologies are changing the boundaries of the firm, and they argue are leading to more use of markets rather than hierarchies or firms to coordinate economic activity and the work involved.
Yeah, one of the things I thought was really interesting about the Malone article was I was thinking about all the things that transpired since they wrote it that they nearly perfectly predicted. Things like business-to-business connection networks on the internet, and that they give the example of the airline reservation systems that in some ways got completely disaggregated. And then in some of the things we're seeing now, though, for example, is you're seeing it getting split up again, where your Southwest Airlines and JetBlue and some other, and probably Ryanair in Europe, they don't participate in the bigger aggregated systems because they're trying to keep their transaction costs as low as possible. So they see an inherent advantage of not participating. So that's a very interesting aspect we can talk about later.
So just a general comment, I think, on the overall text and our purpose here. I think it's a kind of a very interesting, different kind of approach for us in the podcast, because we are getting closer to economic theory, which, as you know, has a different kind of take. It's not so interested necessarily in empirical materials and how really things are, but also many times is looking at a more almost ontological level, if you will. You know, it's more about models and correlations and understandings, almost like one step behind, in just saying how things are, but how they could be in certain situations. And I think what's interesting here, and Greta and Ralph, you were both hitting on that, is that in a way, it starts from where organizational research usually doesn't start. So we usually start with a firm and understand how it functions, how it works, and what are its different structures, and so on and so forth. Economics, and especially the theories of the firm, has more approach of asking ontologically, why are firms in the first place? Because for economists, you know, in principle, they would think that the market could do everything. Whether and how we agree with that, we can discuss later. And I think what is interesting here, and especially in light of, you know, Greta's great work on online liberalist market and so on, is try to use these articles and these overall kind of earlier discussions to think how the things that we take for granted that are the building blocks of organizations, such as the way that work is organized, the way that employment takes place, how technology plays a part in the way tasks are enacted, and how the very idea of the firm, that is its boundaries, gets set. And it's interesting because in a way you can feel that, especially in the work by Williamson, and of course also the article by Malone, there is this willingness to go closer to, you know, Williamson uses even this expression, closer to human nature in itself. And it's very close to that, you know, Carnegie Mellon kind of type of mixing, bridging, more economics, formal modeling with more real life kind of phenomena, I'm trying to understand like a middle ground on how to preserve the parsimony of economics, but also to take account of the reality of facts that we know.
I couldn't have said it better, Pedro. I completely agree. And I think it's important to think about like the time that these articles have been written, and how Williamson also acknowledges at the beginning of his paper that they started to realize the limitations of the market, and how economists became interested in shifting their level of analysis, start looking more at firms. And as a way, this kind of acknowledged the study of organizations as an academic field.
It's kind of almost ironic, you know, in a way to have... I trained as a sociologist, so everything that's economics for me like raised suspicions, but you're very correct. In a way, it is one of the emergence of the importance of, you know, our object of analysis, you know, as a specific actor, a specific property with specific characteristics.
Definitely, yeah. So how shall we go about it? What we could do is kind of going through the Williamson article, basically seeing like the different things he does in his article, because it's quite encompassing what he does. So Williamson is kind of doing four things in his article. And first of all, is like coming back to this argument about transactions and how actually transactions rather than commodities should be made the basic unit of analysis. And at understanding how firms economize on transaction costs through their governance structures should be central to the study of organizations. So he identifies firms and markets as these two leading alternative governance structures. And he describes how the transaction cost approach to the study of organizations can be applied to different levels of analysis, to the overall structure of the firm, to its operating parts, as well as to the organization of human assets or to the workers. So that's kind of the first thing he does. The second thing is that he kind of identifies these different dimensions of describing transactions, such as uncertainty, frequency, and asset specificity. And especially the latter one, he says, is the most important. And it describes whether investments are specific to a particular transaction, making them idiosyncratic. So Coase distinguishes here between three types of asset specificity, which can be like site specificity or physical asset specificity or human asset specificity. And these kind of explain whether the work required to transact a good or service need to be done in a certain place by using specific materials or technologies, or can only be done by certain individuals. Then we can go to the third thing that Williamson is doing, and that's to apply this type of transaction cost thinking to the study of the boundaries of the firm and how to establish the most efficient boundaries. So coming back to this dichotomy between firms and markets, he describes the economic decisions that firms make in defining their boundaries. And Williamson argues that we can view the production process as a series of steps or components that can be included inside a firm, or they can be kept outside the firm. And he argues that the efficient boundary is the inclusive set of core components in a production chain, plus the additional stages for which supply can be shown to be the efficient choice. So he, on page 557, he kind of illustrates his argument with a nice figure. So when assets are non-specific, he says that the market has advantages in production and transaction costs. But when these assets become more specific, the transaction cost of markets can escalate and internal organization will be favored.
So in a way, it's interesting. It's almost like you can see that it's a great step for an economist and to try to acknowledge that the transactions, that the relations are not, you know, just perfectly oiled and done by in a kind of an abstract perfect word, but also there are costs and complications involved in this. And much important here, I think, and he's hitting at that with the whole idea of asset specificity, there is a kind of context-dependent kind of issue. So what I take from this is this kind of lesson that the way that people exchange goods, exchange services, interact in a market. So, and in this market, you can have both buying labor, selling products, hiring people, all this kind of, you know, this kind of social relations. They have a certain kind of dimension that's not automatic, but it has all kind of, you know, complications that we know from the real world that get into that. And the more interesting part is this acknowledgement that depending on what kind of technology, what kind of product, what kind of industry, which is just like he used the shorthand of asset specificity, but you can include all these kind of contextual conditions, is going to shape how much, in his case, how you are going to divide the firm and what things you are more likely to put inside, to put outside, and trace relations with the outside firms and other actors. So it's an interesting kind of opening kind of this dialogue with that perspective.
What I wanted to say about asset specificity, too, is that, you know, when as I read the characterizations, you know, the site specificity, physical asset and human asset, a lot of those are pretty perceptual. I can imagine a situation where different actors within the firm or perhaps outside the firm, and maybe this is more of a question than a statement, would they not perceive those levels of types of specificity differently? Like, I say this because I can imagine where at one level you may have site specificity of a particular product or service related to a natural resource in a particular area. But then at a higher level, let's say a multinational level, well, that is unimportant. We can get the same resource somewhere else. And so we can get it cheaper over there. But then, you know, so there's different perspectives to say whether or not something, you know, a particular asset is specific or not, depending on where you sit. Does that come into play?
That's very interesting, but I think that's one of my critiques to economics. You know, I don't want to start so hard because I want to try as far as I can. But I think one of the issue is all this model and traditional more economic understanding assume that the organizations function in a preset kind of word. But the reality is that organizations also shape the word. It's not just like defined a certain kind of arrangements in the market, but also they shape the markets and they shape the relations. And the case of multinationals is great. It's not just that there is a limit number of choices. They also can create the different choices. They can create the different kind of conditions. So there is a much more, you know, complexified picture, so to speak.
I completely agree. And what I think, like what both Coase and Williamson do is, like, the one makes an argument of why we have organizations, and kind of Williamson provides us with one framework to help us understand why there are different types of organizations. And it's exactly like the site specificity, particular work that goes into production has to happen in a specific place. You need to have certain technologies, and you are dependent upon like workers that have particular skills to be able to do that work. And that might define like why an organization is having the form and is setting its boundaries in a way that we observe, and that might be different for different organizations. Of course, it's quite conceptual, and it's just one way of thinking that has been very influential, but it also has its limitations, and Williamson correctly acknowledges that, and he says like this transaction cost approach, the value of it lies in addressing questions of efficiency. And that's why he doesn't address like why we have firms and how they set their boundaries, but he says like how do firms try to optimize those boundaries, trying to make themselves most efficient. Because if the operations of the firm are not efficient, then according to the transaction cost approach, it would be better to organize those activities in the market.
So I said something before, but I'm going to backtrack a bit, you know, to make another argument. It's very interesting, and he acknowledged that in the paper, which was kind of surprising to me, a strong connection also with the work of Thompson, and in a way which would think more generally as this more contingent kind of school to the study of organizations. And it was something that I never thought before, but reading the article in the original, and again, that's the advantage of going back to the classics, you can see very much that, because in a way, Thompson and the whole argument about coordination costs and the different way that you set up organization and set up interdependence arrangements, which have to do of the nature of the task, the nature of the production, the nature of, you know, a number of different things. And you can see that there is like this kind of almost origins in this idea of Williamson, or at least a mutual shared kind of perception. And so I'm going to backtrack what I said and go to what you were saying, Greta. There is something very interesting, and I think that we have lost today in organizational theorizing, which is this attention to the context, which is attention to exactly what you're saying, the type of organizations, the type of work, the type of technology, like this kind of, to do a pun, almost like these boundary conditions to the organizational process that are interest at hand, that are going to shape the way the firm arranges itself, you know, that's going to set some limits to some optimum designs. And so I think that's something that got a bit lost, but maybe we can talk about that a bit later.
That's very interesting. And what you see now, and I think like the Malone article is a good start of that conversation, is how digital technologies, and like we say like now after the Industrial Revolution, we're in this digital revolution. We see like many firms are changing its shape. The nature of work is changing. The way work is done is changing very rapidly with the rise of platforms, with process of automation and AI, the role of blockchain and digital ledger technologies. So basically this conversation is very relevant to modern day work and organizations, I would say.
Yeah, what I would almost pose as kind of a question is, okay, let's think about the Malone article and electronic markets, electronic hierarchies. The meaning or the understanding of what we think of as site in site specificity or physical asset has kind of changed, hasn't it? Is it still the same principle, just a different understanding of what a site is? Or are we now coming across a situation where what we mean by asset specificity, we now have additional categories not previously captured?
Should we just do an overview of what the paper by Malone says?
So basically, to summarize the argument of Malone, Yates, and Benjamin, this article starts off with the observation that innovations in information technologies since, let's say, the 1960s, radically reduced the time and cost of processing and communicating information. And the authors argue that this brings about many changes in the way work tasks are accomplished in organizations. So they hypothesize that underlying these changes may be more fundamental change in the way products and services are produced in firms and markets. So in the article, they address like the more fundamental question, how information technologies are changing these firm and market-based government structures. And they argue that although new information technologies increase the efficiency of both markets and hierarchies, there will be an overall shift towards more use of markets as a governance structure. So kind of their conceptual analysis builds upon like the transaction cost theorizing of Coase and Williams, making this distinction between cost, production cost and coordination cost, and the latter one being kind of similar as the transaction cost that the economists talked about. And they argue that in markets, production costs can be low, but the transaction costs or the coordination costs are high. And in firms, it's kind of the opposite, that the production costs are higher, but the transaction costs are lower. So what they then do is identifying this asset specificity and bringing a new component to the picture, like the complexity of product descriptions, as two factors that affect transaction costs, and favoring the desirability of firms over markets, because when production of products and services has more asset specificity or their descriptions are more complex, it requires more vertical integration. What they then say is that new information technologies are likely to reduce these transaction costs, and specifically these two dimensions. And kind of the core argument of the authors is that new information technologies can offset the need for vertical integration through hierarchies. So whereas first relied on the hierarchical structure of firms to provide vertical integration, we now can see that information technologies can kind of substitute for that. And whereas first the hierarchy of firms provided like coordination, communication, and integration structures, these roles now can be partially fulfilled by these information technologies. When we, for instance, now think about like the internet, the role of platforms, etc., etc. So kind of these new technologies make it easier to communicate complex product descriptions, and also more flexible manufacturing technology, the author says, make the production assets less specific. So kind of the overall fact, therefore, is that new information technologies will reduce transaction costs, will reduce asset specificity, and increase the proportion of economic activity that's coordinated by the markets.
That's definitely a very interesting article. It's almost like in part an exercise in futurology. and I think it should really be a requirement for anyone interested in things like, you know, change the nature of work, but also any conversation about Uber, gig economy, you know, all this kind of online labor markets, because it's really like you can see how much when we have a complete different set of technologies, kind of the direction could already be in part predicted. So I think it's really interesting to think. And in relation to, I think, the link with the work of Williamson and Coase that is, you know, that Malone and the other authors build upon, I think it's very interesting because in a way, they are taking the idea that if you want to study and think about the firm, by think about how transactions are something that's happening in a kind of a more real world scenario, not just a perfect market. What they bring is that while Williamson and Coase and traditionally economics look at a more individual level of, you know, analysis. So the building block is usually the individuals and the interactions among individuals. And they usually look at the more behavior factors, so to speak. I know Williamson has an interesting discussion about the contracts and honesty / dishonesty in the way people contract things. They bring a different factor, which is technology, you know, which is not only technology, but also how technology shapes the amount of information that is available to different people at different time, and show how once you have this non-human actor in the picture, many things become different. So it's once you accept that you're trying to understand firms through a lens that is a real-world transaction, how they take place, as we have technology that affords different kind of transactions, distributed kind of transactions, you know, having a grasp of a very complex information picture that was not possible before, that is also going to shape the very nature of the way that people interlink and construct organizational structures. So it's a kind of very interesting kind of, you know, building, but taking a different way kind of path that I see.
Yeah, but I guess my question was going back to like maybe it was a bit specific with the Malone article, because they definitely what they had done was they offered that there was actually a fourth category of asset specificity, for example, and they were saying that to add to Williamson's list time specificity. This is on page 486. And the thing that I was just kind of thinking about that and thinking about how asset specificity in particular, which the Malone article obviously highlights as very, very important, is our understanding of what asset specificity means now that we're kind of changing the meaning of asset. Has our understanding of those concepts improved? And the reason why I say that is because there is this undertone that in the electronic marketplace, in the electronic world, if you will, that site specificity is something that should naturally go away. Does it? I don't know that it does. And it may very well be that the nature of, you know, society and reaction to what has come from efforts to try to reduce site specificity may have, you know, created other consequences. And for example, you know, there's like in the customer service, there was definitely a lot of move in the information technology realm and other things to try to move to more of an electronic customer service, to centralize trouble desks, centralize work help desks, I guess is the word I was looking for. Either through automated means, you know, the dial 1-4, the dial 2-4, the dial 43-4, that sort of thing, or to have the your call being from the United States to the United Kingdom and have the actual person responding at the other end of the line being from another country. You know, that sort of is supposed to help ostensibly improve efficiency by making more service more widely available and reduce the site specificity of certain assets. The backlash of that is that there's a loss of personal connection in the providing of the service. Now, reducing site specificity in some avenues, like if you have a customer base that really kind of likes that personal connection that those automated means sort of take away, you know, all of a sudden the efficiency equation is not quite the same, is it? I'm just wondering what your reaction is.
I have a specific example of a couple cases in the defense industry where designers or the shipbuilders actually wanted to use a tool and bring outside organizations, regulators, and people involved in the production process inside via the tool that gave them much greater ability to integrate the information. So the U.S. Navy's Virginia-class submarine was done that way, where they had one tool that everybody was using, and you could communicate to a level of detail that was up to then not possible. And the shipbuilder made the argument that it would lower their transaction costs of exchanging the information, and they could go faster as a result. So I've seen this a couple times where somebody has a software tool, and it's not just about locking somebody into their proprietary product ordering system, which the authors give some examples of, but it's about bringing other people into the design process. So I think that's really, really interesting development.
So it's kind of ironic. I was listening to you say that and made me think of a different aspect of the paper, the Malone paper, is that almost they are taking technology as a black box very much, as the same way the economists originally took transactions as just something that happens in the market and is perfect because, you know, you have two agents that come and they have their interests and just a matter of the two agents walking through their different interests and negotiating. It's the same thing. There is this idea. And I think because they had a very limited pool of technology they were thinking about that I think reacted and acted in a certain way. And once we have this huge oceans of different kinds of possibilities nowadays, you know, we know that technology in itself doesn't do, I mean, it does a lot of things, but not necessarily does the things that we want it to do. So the CAD/CAM is a great example because I've studied complex product development. And of course, CAD/CAM and the integration across design and manufacturing is very normal nowadays, but there is still a lot of problems in integration because you might have the system that both occupational groups can look into, but doesn't mean that they understand the same things, that they have the same interests, that they are aligned. in so many other ways. And, you know, all the work that people like Pat Bechke, Paul Carlisle have done have showed that, that many times you can have the instrument, but the way that the different occupational communities, the status, the understandings, you know, still have a bear to play in this condition. So technology is something that, of course, shapes, but and in a way, I would even argue that some of their predictions seems very accurate and at least, you know, interesting to think about it today, but also does a number of things that we don't expect. And you have a great example on a more maybe personal level on how things that we think that it's so impossible to be distributed has consequences when it's distributed.
I completely agree. And from my own research, like I study like the emergence of like online labor markets and how firms start to work with independent freelancers or independent workers through online platforms. And one of the areas is exactly this customer support, where you've seen like that where in the past 10, 20 years, like companies have let go of this site specificity and started to first like outsource it, then it was offshored. But also through these offshoring companies, some firms started to realize the limitations that this model of work brought about. For instance, having a lot of intermediate managers between the person responsible for the offshoring program of customer support and the actual agent doing the work. So when they wanted to change a particular process in the customer support, how the agents had to interact with customers or wanted to update their knowledge about like technological changes of the product, it took a very, very long time to do that. And so instead of going back to the old model, actually some of these firms have started to adopt platforms as a digital intermediary that enables them to work directly with these agents. So they don't need like the manager at the outsourcing company, the contract with the outsourcing company, and then a manager within the firm, and then the person above that manager responsible for the overall program, but having a more one-to-one relation. So that's like one thing where I see like, well, they let go of the site specificity. They started to realize the limitations of how they organize the work by means of new information technologies. And then they adopted other information technologies that are now available to look at a new model of work.
Right. Those are the key questions for organizations, right? How do you do that? And what do you choose to outsource? I think you're really right. Very, very prescient on the part of the authors.
I wonder just one thing, because as I was listening to, especially what Tom was saying before, is that I was wondering, I realize there's another kind of, you know, underlying assumption in the work by Malone, which is this very classic idea of, so there's a very strong classic approach of information processing. So they're looking at coordination and the way that the market and the firms and the, in this case, the electronic markets and the electronic hierarchy take place for very information processing. That is, the problem is how you distribute information across different individuals that are either in a hierarchy or in a market government structure. But as we know, and I'll go back to know that work you would know so well, Greta, as well, of, you know, all the people like Kalai and Bechke, that have shown that the information processing doesn't, I mean, it accounts for the individual level and is a very cognitive kind of discussion, but doesn't account for all the wholesale individual social issues that come in social relations when the different people are together. So I wonder if, in the passage, maybe something that we know we can expand more in the next parts, but it'd be interesting to think whether with this passage from outsource offshore to the platforms and the use of intermediaries, which is more kind of an atomized kind of arrangement, these things still play a part, or if we get closer to this more like perfect atomized market-based kind of arrangement.
Sure. So kind of starting off with the Williamson article and also the article of Coase, like both of them are Nobel Prize winners. And kind of the thinking they developed, like this transaction cost approach to started off this entire stream of research and theorizing on the boundaries of the firm. Like what What is the firm about? Why are there different types of firms? How can we start to explain why firms are so different? So it's been highly influential there, and also kind of legitimized the study of organizations as an entity in itself, as they started to realize the limitations of the market-based models that the economists had been working on up till that time. And what we see kind of today is that this transaction cost economics is used to explain a variety of phenomena, and amongst others, like the emergence of new organizational forms, and what we talked about a little bit already is like the changing nature of work. So one interesting fact is, I'm not sure if you're aware of this book, Great Minds in Management, but Oliver Williamson is mentioned as one of the great minds, and especially acknowledging, like, he brought together in his work, like, these three different streams of literature and the developments inside these literatures, in law, in economics, and in organization theory that started to emerge as a field. And up till then, these developments had not been related to each other, and they didn't have a coherent framework to find a common language to talk about these developments. I thought that was an interesting fact. And I think, like, the value of the Malone, Yates and Benjamin article kind of speaks for itself. Like, it was written in 1987, and like you said, we're now 30 years ahead, and we see all these predictions coming true. Like, they're talking about these digital intermediaries. We see platforms popping up everywhere around us. They talk a bit about automation, I think, in the end. That's a very pressing conversation in our field. Here's a quote, like, on page 496 and 497, the authors have some concluding statements, and they kind of say, like, we should expect fundamental changes in how firms and markets organize the flow of goods and services in our economy. And one of the implications of the work is that they say all firms should consider whether more of the activities they currently perform internally could be performed less expensively or more flexibly by outside suppliers, while selection and work could be coordinated by computer-based systems. And I thought, like, this kind of summarizes it. This is what we have seen in the past 3 decades happening.
So on that note, just a quick reflection. I think that, you know, I was listening to what you were saying, and I think the Williamson and also the Coase that we didn't read, but, you know, it is like the background, is interesting because it seems that it set up many questions that are still very important. You know, all this idea of, you know, difference among firms, how firms are, you know, what kind of firms exist and what kind of counterbounders they are. It's something that, you know, it has been explored maybe through different lenses, maybe through different approaches, but in a way I can see the emergence of the question itself as a point to be explored. And the Malone building on that, I think it was important because it pushed this kind of understanding of the firm, in this case, the organization as an object of analysis that is not only built on the idea of who people are in the organization, determining how it is structured, but also how organizations are organized, and that entails technology and a whole variety of elements as a kind of, you know, an essential part of understanding organizational processes.
Right. I mean, particularly from the point of view of information flow, right? That's not something it would just jump right out at you. And I think you, Pedro, you brought up some good points that we want to explore in the next part of this episode. So stay tuned, and we will be going into some more detail there.
And that's all for part one of episode 44. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the discussion and that you're finding the readings as fascinating as the podcasters have. Please remember to recommend the podcast to your friends, colleagues, and students, get in touch with us with any feedback and or questions, and also subscribe to our newsletter, which is something that you can do on our website. In case you haven't heard yet, we are now working on a podcast book together with Sage Publishing, and we invite all of our listeners, yourself personally included, to contribute to that. For more information on that, also please go to our website. In other news, you may have heard that the podcast is going to be the centerpiece of the forthcoming Organizational Learning, Knowledge and Capabilities Conference that is going to take place in late April next year in Brighton at the University of Sussex. Now, there was only a limited release of information about this conference as to this point, and we are going to inform our listeners more about it. But if you'd like to learn more about the theme, about who the amazing speakers are, please go to the website of the conference at www.olkc2019.com. All right. We hope to see you next week as we continue discussion of transactional cost approach here on Talking About Organizations.